Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Weekender here on Planet FM, if you listen on 104.6, or on Planet Audio across the country or across the world. I hope we can provide a good show for you. As you probably just heard at the beginning, yesterday was Anzac Day, and really it's one of the few days where it's a day of reflection. There's nobody pushing their political agenda, nobody, you know, putting their rights. It's about remembering, and let it always be a day of reflection. Here to join us, as he does every Saturday, and I'm pleased to always have him as part of this show, AJ Wheaton.
Yeah, good morning. Good morning, Peggy. And hey, look, just tonight's introduction, all I'll say is hats off to all the servicemen out there and women for what they've done in the past and what they do to the present and the future. Yeah, just a great way to remember them all, and thank you for what they do. Cheers.
Absolutely, and our servicemen that not only went to the Great War in World War One, we look at World War Two, we look at the Korean War, the war in Vietnam, to some of the modern day conflicts in New Zealand. The New Zealand military has really represented themselves well. Anyway, let's get on to the rugby part of the show, and of course, Chiefs 56, Force 22. I have to say, Sean Stevenson was electric. He was fantastic. The Jacob Ramata combination was fantastic, and Takiako, a brilliant game for him.
Yeah, it was a funny game because I thought the Force came out with all the bells and whistles and really gave it a bit of a crack and entertaining at times. Mind you, the ball was pretty slippery, so there was going to be some errors. But I don't know, at half time, I know Damien McKenzie not there. But the boy Jacob came on board. Took a wee bit of a while to get the combination going, but it was just one-way traffic in the second half. No doubt the Mount Maunganui crowd were entertained, but good to see Tukiao taking the ball up, getting back to his old form. But again, I thought the back row, Boshier, Jacobson especially, set the platform, and just too big, too strong in the end. And as you mentioned, the backs to Pia, Nawa, Stevenson, just finishing off some nice quality ball with tries all over the place.
Yeah, and I have to say, at certain parts of that match, the Force was really, really, really giving it to the Chiefs, but the Chiefs just had too much class.
Yeah, well, you thought this boy Harry Potter, well, you thought he was a bit of a magician, especially that second try from the kickoff down the right. I don't know where the Chiefs, I thought that maybe they're sitting down having a cup of tea, but that was very smart play, obviously one they'd analysed, and they picked up a nice little bonus try. So well done to them. He certainly got some wheels, but they needed a lot more ball, a lot more quality, and they just didn't have the finish, and just shows you why the Chiefs are a bit at the top or near the top of the table.
Absolutely, AJ. Absolutely. And then we move on to Brisbane last night. And, the Reds 35, the Blues 21. I believe this could be the end of the road for the Blues.
Yeah. Well, people always say, you look at it, they haven't got a bad run home, as I mentioned. Obviously, they've got the Force, which we are entertaining for them to win. Well, they better win, because I'll tell you this now, Biggie, if they don't beat the Force, and they're going to have to work hard to do that, where they are, not only physically but mentally, they're just not consistent enough, and they've certainly got some issues in their defence. I don't know what's going on there, but leaking some tries, then I think they're in big trouble. But they've certainly got an opportunity to finish in that six, whether they deserve to be or not. Well, that's not for me to decide. But yeah, very impressed with the Reds at home. Obviously having a couple of inconsistent weeks, but that combination, McDermott and Tom Liner, of course, the boy Noddy Liner, who I played against at first five, against Aussie many times, he was talent, so was obviously he's passed that on to his son. But they just handled the conditions a lot better, under all sorts of pressure, really. After the first 10 minutes, they dominated. Of course, they're up 14 points. But boy, the Blues, they couldn't buy a ticket because they're in a lottery. Four times over the line, four times denied, some knock-ons, and they just couldn't get the points on the board. And going in at 14-7, they were still in it. But, it just opened up in the second half, and the Reds totally deserved their win.
Joe Smart must be looking at these combinations he has across his franchises, a halfback and first fives, and he must be thinking, God, we've got some great options here.
Well, I think he'd be a lot more happier than the last year. Some players are coming to the fore. I think it's giving them options where possibly they didn't have in the past. They probably had a set 2021 and that was it. But now that the pool's got a bit bigger, no doubt the franchise, the Rebels leading, has just given a bit more depth to the competition for Australian sides, and we're seeing that. A lot more confidence. I mean, you know, McCrate's been around for a while, and Brawl and Uru, and that loose forward combination, they're just playing a lot of rugby together. I thought Tasimi in the number 12, he's always a solid, very good on defence, and they scored a couple of really good tries, and I think that's what's impressing me, is that they're having a go and they're finishing. And I'm quite impressed with some of the tries they've scored, where the Blues, sticking to the same old bash and crash, let's get next to the line, keep going and going, but they get there in the end. But I think they've just got to show some creativity. They're not throwing the ball out wide. We're not seeing anything out the backs. We know that Talia is a talent. Sadly, he got sent off for that tackle and red carded. But we know they've got some talent there, and Lamb and Ione and Sullivan. I just think we're not seeing enough of it. But they're not seeing enough ball in the hand to create opportunity and see them what they can do, because they are talented. So a bit disappointing to me, probably in the tactics or the pattern they're playing at the moment.
I'd have to agree with you there, AJ. There doesn't seem to be any pattern at all. They just, like Talia's tackle, well, that was just silly. Absolute silly, yeah.
Well, it cost them, and they're down 14. You're not going to win a match with 14 men. They gave it a good crack for a while, but 14 men just doesn't work.
So we move on to the Saturday games, and of course the first one, Moana Pacifica versus Fiji and Drua. Wow, this should be a cracking match, but you know what? I am picking Moana to win that. I was talking to Kevin Senior. They're very, very anxious about this match today, but I just believe the improvement within this Moana Pacifica side will really come to the fore today.
Yeah, and they're playing at home over in the harbour, so you'd think that this is what I'll take them to, playing at home. They're playing overseas, of course, I'm a bit preachy to them. But there'll be safe hands there, Havili at fullback there. Garden Bashup, they've gone for Garden Bashup there at number 10, so that shows you they'll play a bit more of a tactical game, I'm assuming. Don't want to get into the throwing the ball around like Fiji Drua do, so they'll stick to their knitting, try and keep it tight with the big forwards, you know, big Savini in their number two and Tui Kuluto. So they've got some established front rowers there, Moana Pacifica, so a bit more controlled rugby from them. They want to win. They want to win at home in front of their frowns. I think Glenn Jackson, he's made two or three changes. Yes, they've certainly got some talent there. Kuruvalai at number 9, Armstrong, Ravulu at 10. I think that's a nice combination. But, hey, it's going to be an exciting game, as you mentioned, Piggy. So if the Fijians get enough ball, it could be a long day at the office for Moana, but I think they just want to tie it up and come away with some points.
I think that's what they're aiming for, is a win, just to keep in touch with the players.
Correct.
And then we go down to the 7:05 game. It's Forsyth Barr Stadium. Highlanders versus Crusaders. The Highlanders, another team where basically they have to throw everything at the Crusaders and hope for a win just to keep in touch with the Six.
Yeah, well, again, you know, Jamie Joseph, they started with a bit of a hiss and a roar, and they've just got themselves into a patch. Can't quite seem to get out of. We know they've got some very talented players. Tata Vanavai, we always talk about, just needs to get the ball. I mean, Fakatava and Miller, that very established combination. I see they've got a new back row. He's made changes with his Stoddard and Howden. That's the first time I've seen that one take the field. So very interesting there. So he's probably throwing caution to the wind. Let's have a crack. We need to get a win at home. But sadly, I can't see it. I see the front row's changed as well. Ethan de Groot's there, but two new starters. And playing against the Crusader team that seems to be high on confidence. Leo Blue's playing well at 8. Christie, number 7. I mean, there's a nice combination. You've got Cody back there with Newell and Bauer. Wow. All black front row. And I see George Bauer's re-signed to 2027, so he's happy there. Happy campers, so they'll produce the goods. I think they'll work for it. There's no love lost between these two franchises, but I'm backing the Crusaders, but not by much.
Yep, and then we move on to the late game in Canberra, the Brumbies versus the Hurricanes. Hurricanes gained confidence from the result last week, but yet again, this is another team that really does need to actually make an impression tonight, because, you know, they're another team chasing playoffs.
Yeah, and I thought they would be better, Piggy, to be honest. Again, another team that's had two or three close shaves. You know, you put those into the win column and they're sitting really in just inside, you know, that top six. So they're another one a bit like the Hurricanes. Have got some talent, but they just haven't been able to get that combinations working. And, you know, I'm going to stay with the home side there at Geo Stadium in Canberra. It's a cold place to play. It's not very inviting. I've played there a few times. You just want to get in and get out. But they know their rugby there. They play it well, playing at home there. And, of course, you know, I'm expecting some uplift in tempo. Roy Garden love to really set the longest back line. I mean, you got Proctor there, Punavai, Naholo. They know they can score tries and they can throw it around from anywhere, but they've just got to get that consistency with the ball. So big job ahead of them in the tight five, but playing at home there against a very well-organised combination, the Brumbies. I think they're going to go home without the point.
Yep, I'll have to agree with you on that one, AJ. Well, what's the rest of the day hold for AJ Whitten?
Well, for me and Mrs. Ben, we're going to try and put our feet up. We've had a busy couple of days, of course.
Did he have another party?
No. We've had enough parties, but we had the great send-off of John May here.
Yeah.
It was fantastic. And can I just say to John, though he's gone, his wife Sue and his lovely children, what an absolute privilege for them to speak and listen to them, their stories of their father. What an incredibly tight family, loving family, and they did their father absolutely proud. It was just a magical day. Enjoyment, yes, and sadness, but it was a lovely day to be part of.
Yep, and that's a lovely tribute, AJ, and I hope that you and Mrs. Whitten, say hello to Mrs. Whitten. I know I'm her favourite broadcaster.
Well, we're just out there to look at a new washing machine and dryer. I just might send the invoice your way because you're a very generous man. Thanks, Peggy.
Yeah, okay. Bye-bye, AJ. You have a fantastic weekend. See you, mate. See you. Bye. AJ Whitten, fantastic. Anyway, this was brought to you by Father Ted's Original Irish Pub. They're based at 1 Wellesley Street West in the Auckland Central Business District. They have a selection of local craft and international draft beers on tap, a selection of bottled beers, fine wines, good spirits, great food and music Wednesday night through to Saturday night. So make Father Ted's your location to go to. Their number is 09-377-3142, or you can email them fatherteds@hotmail.com. Well, that's that part of the show over with, and so we move on to the next one, which will be our regional club rugby review.
Working on the land with his mum and dad. He left behind his girl, joined up to see the world, and made his mother sad. He made it through the war, came back to town, help his father work the fields and rebuild his life somehow. And everybody called him the Anzac. That's still what they call him now. His mind to stay when his father passed away and the rivers ran dry. He said, "I'll take care of you, Mom. I fought before and won. We can win this fight." forgot.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend. You know, a lot of the music today will be mixed around the Anzac Spirit and Anzac Day. And before we go to our next guest, which is Stephen Harris for a regional club rugby review, a quick shout out to Force Electrical. At Force Electrical, they are a team of experienced professionals dedicated to providing high quality electrical services for both residential and commercial clients with over 10 years of experiences. They pride themselves in being reliable and thorough and taking care and ensuring that their clients' needs are met. Anyway, give them a call. Their number is 021-628-341, or you can email nick at forceelectrical.co.nz. So we have had, it's been a bit of a weekend of regional club rugby with Anzac Day yesterday, so there were a few games played right across the Northland and North Harbour unions, and a couple in Auckland. Here to join us, Stephen Harris, good morning.
Yes, good morning, sir. Always a privilege and a pleasure to be on your show, buddy.
Oh, it certainly is, mate. Send me your bank account details for saying that.
No worries, that can be done.
Yeah. Anyway, we might as well start it off. These were the results from Thursday and Friday in Northland Club Rugby. Old Boys Marist 33, Moriwa 34. That must have been a hell of a game. And then we had Hikarangi 14, Welshford Omatea 33, and I suspect the rumour is the Omatea fans are still celebrating at the pub. And of course we had Western Sharks 33, Mid-Northern, who look like the favourites to take it out this year in Northland, 41, and the Saturday game, Kerikeri versus Horahora.
That was a bit of a top-of-the-table clash, that Western Sharks Mid-Northern game. And Petro Ratamaivuki, and I'm not too sure if he's a relations of Ratamaivuki, Joseph Ratamaivuki and Nick Netkins, scored four tries yesterday, and that was on the back of, I know the other, a couple of weeks ago, he scored three tries as well. So this young Fijian boy who's been part of the Fijian Sevens program a couple of seasons back, scoring a lot of tries in Northland Club Rugby. But yeah, a couple of other good wins as well. Aitamatea, they'll be pretty, Aitamatea Welshford combined team these days, they'll be pretty buoyed by that victory. And I believe Rennie Ranger played the hooker. So he's seems like he's playing most positions these days. But good to see him giving something back to rugby.
Oh, well. Well, that's great. That's great. Rennie Ranger played hooker. I'd love to see that. That'd be brilliant.
Oh, absolutely. So, you know, just really, really great to see, of course, Welshford Aitamatea getting that win over Hikarangi, who haven't quite fired this year. So I know their coach, Corey Abrahams, will be very, very disappointed with the way they're going. And just, of course, our final game today, that's Kerikeri, who will be hosting Horahora today. I think Kerikeri are a team on the rise. I think they'll be too strong for Horahora.
Yeah, there certainly will be. Then we move on to North Harbour. Now, these were the results yesterday. North Shore 97, Maharangi 12, ooh, Silverdale 41, Kumu 20. So those were the results from yesterday. Today's games in the North Harbour competition, now we've got Takapuna versus East Coast Bays. That's been a rivalry that's gone on for a long time since the existence of North Harbour. And, of course, Northcote versus Massey. Now, that'll be a great game as well.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Listen, Takapuna are to be commended for their away win against Northcote in that local derby last week. Look, was a close one, wasn't it? 31-30, yeah. And I must admit, I think we might have both picked our home side to actually win that game. So credit to Takapuna. I think they'll be far too strong for East Coast Bays, and I think Northcote will be, you know, they'll probably be a bit disappointed, but this is the battle between second and third. Northcote at home. Oh boy, you know what? I think I'll probably go for Northcote. I think they'll be a little bit upset about what happened last weekend, so I'll go for the home side.
Absolutely. Then we move on to Auckland Women's Premier competition yesterday. Now, this was a huge result. Ponsonby 71, College Rifles 29.
Well, yeah, certainly did not see that one coming. Although Ponsonby, that was their second straight win, so they are travelling very, very well at the minute.
Yeah, that was unbelievable. So here are some of the games in the Women's Premier competition in Auckland. Mangerewa versus North Shore, Maris versus Paramahoe, and Silverdale versus Papatoe. Well, I'm probably going to go Mangerewa against North Shore, and I'm probably Maris, but the last one, well, that one could be a hard one to pick.
Yeah, a bit of a lolly scramble, isn't it? I pretty much go along with you on what you're pretty much saying. Yeah, the Silverdale Papatoetoe game. If you look at these two teams on the table, both winless at this stage, they've conceded similar amounts of points. Listen, I think probably I'll go for the home team, Silverdale, to do the business. It's a long drive up to Silverdale, isn't it, from Papatoetoe?
Yeah, it is, and I think, that'll be interesting. Anyway, we look at yesterday's games in the Auckland Men's Premier competition. Now, College Rifles, it's always a great day out there, and they really, Anzac Day, they always do play. So, they had a very close win, 22-19 against Suburbs. Suburbs are getting close. I think they're going to win a game, but it won't be next week because they're playing us, so we won't get any further. And, of course, Ponsonby 35, University 8. Now, I know it was Ponsonby's old boys' day. In fact, I was grabbing my coffee and Kevin Senior actually invited me, and I said, I thought, damn it, I could turn up there with all my Eden gear and be welcomed by the Ponsonby old boys, but probably more welcome than a certain All Black, but we won't get into that, so yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say that was quite a tight contest up until halftime. It was only 7-3 at the break, but obviously Ponsonby got their wind in the sails in the second half and pretty much steamed on home in that particular contest. But boy, I know reading through their team list, that's an absolutely stacked side, isn't it?
Oh yeah, it is.
A lot of quality, and a couple of ex super rugby players.
Yeah.
Back on, listen to this, Peyton Spencer in the back, Nigel R. Wong, who's basically played for the likes of the Brumbies, Ali Pate Leilua, at centre, William Tapana, wise guy Fayani, Danny Tusitala. Man, that's an NPC quality backline, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it is. It certainly is. And they're going to be very, very hard to beat this year. I just think they're going to be hard, and but there will be teams that will fancy themselves. So, yeah. Anyway, we move on to today's games. Papatoe versus Grammar Tech, Maris versus Pakuranga, and the big one, which we'll leave to last. So we'll go to those two games, Papatoe versus Grammar Tech. Now, I watched Papatoe last week. The rumour is that they had a lot of players out for a wedding. And how true it is, how it isn't, but I'm hearing it was pretty much true. But they were, I think they may struggle this year, but at home they're very, very hard to beat in Papatoe. But I think G-Tech, they've just got too many good guns there.
Yeah, they have. I think they've once again got some real key guys as well with NPC experience. Of course, Leah Callum Eames, who I think might be skippering the side these days, he always leads from the front. And listen, Papatoetoe, despite having some players back today, I think the visitors will be too strong.
Absolutely. Then we go to Maris versus Pakuranga.
Yeah, that's an interesting game. Of course, Pakuranga last week struggled to put a plucky Waitemata team away by a couple of points, and Maris, I thought, gave a really good account of themselves against Ponsonby in that first round game, and based on that alone, I think Maris, I think they'll be too strong for Pakuranga today.
Now we come to this one, Stephen, and this is where we're going to put a coffee on this. Well, Waitemata versus Eden.
Home team first. Yeah, oh, mate. I'm going down to watch, mate, and there might be people from Waitemata listening, so I'm going to go for the home side, mate. Although my head tells me Eden might be too strong. They'll be pretty buoyed from that hit out against Papa.
Oh, yeah, and it was it was great. Anyway, I'll make my predictions as I've done every year when I followed Eden. The sun will set at 4:25, 4:15, and it will set at 225 Gribblehurst Park, which is the home of Eden Rugby Club, Eden to win.
Oh, good on you. Where else were you going to go?
You've got to be one-eyed. Yeah, absolutely. You have to be one-eyed. Yeah. But anyway, we move on. Counties Manukau, Ardmore Marist versus Karaka, Bombay versus Mangarewa, Pakuranga versus Padamahoe. Well, two of the games are easier to pick, and we know that. The Bombay Mangarewa game, that could be a very interesting competition. I'm leaning towards Bombay.
I'm just sort of having a quick squiz where these two teams are on the table. Yeah, Bombay Manurewa, Bombay sitting on 5 points, Manurewa sitting right behind them. Jeepers, there was once upon a time these two teams would be near the top of the table. I think Bombay, given that they are playing at home, have that advantage, in my opinion. The other game is pretty easy to pick, really. Even though Ardmore Marist are hosting and they're improved, I'm expecting Karaka to be too strong. And unfortunately for Papakura, they've conceded 153 points in three games. Doesn't make for good reading, does it, against the current champions?
It certainly does, and I think they're really going to struggle this year, Papakura, unfortunately. Really, I think it's going to be a really long season for them.
Oh, very much so.
Anyway, just before we go, Anzac Day, it's a special day, isn't it?
Oh, very, very much so, and it has a special tie-up with rugby as well. You know, obviously, a lot of former All Blacks were also servicemen as well. I watched the great documentary yesterday morning. I think it's been on before, but hosted by Andrew Mertens.
The one on Radio New Zealand, that's fantastic, about the soldiers that died in the First World War.
Absolutely brilliant. And, just to basically see him over in France, walking around the various graves, looking at the various epitaphs, just absolutely amazing. But, you know, not just in rugby, we salute all our servicemen.
Absolutely.
Who sort of gave so much to give us the better life that we have, although you kind of do wonder if some people take all that for granted, if you know what I mean, when you kind of read about the actual, murder rate and stuff like that, violence increasing. You know, you kind of wonder, there are people out there who gave their lives.
Hmm.
You know, to make life that little bit better for us. So, yeah, it's a pretty warped world we live in, I've got to say. But yesterday, and that was a day where we remember them, don't we?
It's a day of reflection, Stephen, and and I hope it remains that day. I don't want people pushing their agendas, their own political agendas. That's not that day. Leave it alone. It's a day for this, for both our countries to remember.
Totally agree. Great to see it also recognised in a lot of the sport as well, whether you're watching the NRL or Super Rugby. It's great to see it. Hopefully we see it at Club Rugby this afternoon.
Out of
Waitemata Park. Before I go, are we going to see you there?
Now, unfortunately, I've got club duties at Eden to do, so we're having to sort a few things out. So, unfortunately, I won't be able to make it out. A few of my colleagues will be out there, and unfortunately, I'll have to put in my apologies. Probably if I go there, they might lose. So, probably best to stay home.
We'll lose. My phone will still be on tomorrow, mate. No, all good.
And if you win, I'll be turning off my phone. You have a wonderful day, Stephen. Ta-da, mate. Bye.
Good on you, man. Have a great day.
Cheers. Stephen Harris, absolutely wonderful. He is absolutely wonderful. So we will just keep this going. And next up, we'll speak to Joey Green. We'll talk a bit of NRL and Auckland Club Rugby League.
Did you know cancer?
Some things will never fade away. Some memories will stay. There's one day in each year you will not forget. If this is your last year, we will not forget. One more parade, one less digger by your side. You ride, hold your head up high, hold your head.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend, and now lest we forget, yesterday was a very, very special day, and you know, had a bit of a rant, and you know, but that's the way I feel about things at the moment, especially in this country. Anyway, we're going to talk some positive stuff, and here to talk rugby league, and here to talk to us, the young fella from the Auckland Rugby League, Joey Green. How are you? Hey, Joey, how are you, mate?
Yeah, great. It's always better when the Warriors get a win, and my beloved Melbourne Storm get a win on the NZAC Day as well, so a great way to start the weekend.
Well, first of all, I have to say, a very, very good win for the Warriors. Luke Metcalf, I still have questions over his kicking game, but he was outstanding. Jackson Ford, Halasina, I think the Warriors have found a very, very special player there.
Yeah, I thought the Warriors always seem to look in control of the game last night, and it just looked like Newcastle never really looked like they were much of a threat to the Warriors last night. I thought, Metcalf, starting to find his feet as a halfback. There's still, you know, a couple of question marks about his kicking game, but I think he's starting to improve as the season goes on. A couple of the middles that I was really impressed with last night was Aaron Clark and Jackson Ford. They got through a ton of work. You know, Aaron Clark playing 64 minutes last night and, you know, seemed to be one of the better middles. And Jackson Ford coming off the bench, I think that's probably the way to go for Webster. For the rest of the season, he just brings, you know, a different kind of body, and he seems to have his best impact when he comes off. But I think the biggest question going forward about this Warriors side is once Fisher Harris comes back into the side, you know, Leka Halasima's been too good to, you know, keep on the bench. Or does Murata stay in the middle rotation like he was last night, or does Leka drop back to the bench and Murata slides out to the edge? But when you look at this Warriors side, it's probably the best problems they could be having when they're having to shuffle guys around to fit in. You know, the young blood who are, you know, hungry as ever to get opportunities in the 17, and you know, when they're still winning games week in, week out, who knows where they're going to end up in a few weeks.
Yeah, that's true. That's true indeed there, Joey. And I have to say, it's confidence building. And you know, for the Warriors, they need to win these games. These games become crucial as the season goes on. So I must admit, fantastic. Thursday night, blown away. Broncos 42, Bulldogs 18. That would be the best first half of rugby league I've seen from any NRL side.
Yeah, I think the Broncos just blew the Bulldogs out of the park, to be fair. Obviously discipline kind of cost the Bulldogs on Thursday night. With a couple of sin bins in that first half, which really just couldn't help their momentum get going. And by the time the Bulldogs started playing some good football, the game was already pretty well gone. The Broncos kind of tapered off in that second half once they knew They had the game in control. But credit to Brisbane for bouncing back the way they did. You know, they kind of needed it to happen after the, I guess, up and down season they've had. And, you know, there's no better way to go about it than beating the side sitting on top of the ladder at the moment.
Absolutely, and I think, you know, I look at it, the Hunt and Reynolds combination, Salmon Cobbo, and of course the main man, Payne Haas, he definitely has to be the big favourite for the Dally M.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that Dally M ladder looks by the end of the season, because Payne Haas just seems to get through a mountain of work week in, week out, and I've got no idea how he manages to do it, because he's, you know, probably 6'5", 120 kilos, and if that's what he's going to do every week, then there shouldn't be anyone closer his Dally M votes come September.
Yes, and then we move on to yesterday, Roosters 46, Dragons 18, the Sandon Smith Show. Now, Sandon Smith, I've been mentioning him for a couple of weeks, how impressed I have, and he was just fantastic. Angus Crichton and Victor Radley done some good work on the edges as well.
Yeah, last year we had Sam Walker stand up on Anzac Day, and this year it was Sandon Smith. What a performance he had last night. You know, even managed to get Sinbin as well, but once he came back from the Sinbin, he just seemed to click back into gear, and the Roosters just carrying on you know, a rich form period they've got. And I think there might be a bit of a selection problem once Sam Walker finds his feet back in. Once he comes back from injury, you know, you've got Sandon Smith playing such great football, but you've got Hugo Savali outside him as well, who's they're really starting to connect well. And if they're going to carry on the form that they've got at the moment, then great problems for Trent Robinson to have once Walker's back.
And, of course, then we have the Storm 24, Rabbitoh 16. The Storm do what they always do. They just win.
Yeah, Melbourne just needed to bounce back after, you know, the shock loss they had to the Dolphins, you know, last week. So, you know, it was great to see Bellamy's boys get another win on the bout last night. Great to see Sua Faalongo back in first grade. You know, he's had a bit of an up-and-down period at the club, but, you know, he really stood up in the 50 minutes that he played last night before he copped a bit of a head knock from Latrell Mitchell. But I still wouldn't count out this Rabbitoh side, you know, in the back end of the season. They're playing some really good football. Joey Gray, I like the look of him at 5'8". So, you know, if Cody Walker is still going to be out for an extended period of time, then maybe we see Joey Gray move from fullback to six.
Maybe. Yeah, that could happen, man. Anyway, we move on to the Saturday games. Cowboys versus Titans, Panthers versus Seagulls. Well, that Cowboys-Titans, it's a bit of a Queensland derby, but the Cowboys have been playing some good football.
Yeah, Cowboys playing some really good football at the moment. You know, three wins in a row. The complete opposite to Gold Coast, who are riding three losses in a row as well. So going to be interesting to see how, if the Titans can bounce back at all this week. AJ Brimson, and a new halves partner, and Tom Weaver, who's a bit of a younger halfback, but still very quality as well. But the Cowboys, I just think at home they're going to be, you know, too hard to stop. They've had three good wins in a row against the Raiders, the Panthers, and the Bunnies last weekend. So they're looking really, really good to, you know, get into the, I guess you could say, the grind of the season now, these middle rounds where, you know, players are starting to get battered and bruised. But I think the Cowboys are really going to stand up tonight.
Absolutely. And, of course, Panthers, the bottom of the table, Panthers versus the Seagulls. Well, they might be at the bottom of the table now, but I've just got this feeling they're not going to be there for too much longer.
No, they bounced back last week and a very big bounce back against the Roosters in Manly. They're not looking too bad at the moment, but you know, you look at their last run of games. They're coming off three losses in a row, and Penrith, I think, are really going to start to click into gear this week. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see a Penrith win tonight. Although they're at the bottom of the ladder, I think this might be the start of Penrith's bounce back.
I think so too, yeah. Anyway, we move on to Sunday. Raiders versus the Dolphins and the Tigers versus the Sharks. Well, the Raiders versus the Dolphins, you could favour the Raiders, but you discount the Dolphins at your peril.
Yeah, look, Canberra's a really tough place to go to for anyone, and, you know, with how the Raiders have started the season, I suppose a lot of pundits would be expecting Canberra to win. But the Dolphins, three wins in a row, and are really starting to play some good football at the moment. When you look at the last two times these sides have played each other, last year Canberra won by 1 point, and the year before they won by 1 point as well. So I think we're going to be in for a close one, but I'm going to be backing the Dolphins in this one, who are starting to find some form. And Isaiah Katoa and Cody Nakarima, I think, are going to lead the way for them tomorrow.
Absolutely. And then we move to the Tigers versus the Sharks. Lachie Galvin's back for the Tigers. That drama is going to keep on going all year. It's a drama that keeps on giving. I think the Sharks will be just too good.
Yeah, Galvin back, Sunday Arvo, what more could you want as a Tigers fan? But I think just with all the drama that's kind of going on at the club at the moment, I just think it's going to be too hard for them to shake it off. They're basically back to full strength, but when you've got the amount of pressure on the club as you do, I think it's going to be too much for them when a side like Cronulla, who want to be premiership contenders, they'll be looking for three wins in a row, and I think they'll get it tomorrow.
Yep, absolutely. So we move on to Fox Memorial Qualifiers, and there are a couple of games this week. Glenora Bears versus Mangaroa, Otahuhu versus Marist Saints in Group A. Well, Glenora versus Mangaroa, well, one of them qualifies to be part of the Fox Memorial Chase. Well, I'm going to pick Mangaroa in this one, Joey. I think there's real problems out of Glenora.
Yeah, real warning signs out at Glenora at the moment. Two very heavy losses for the club, and Manurewa, although they've had heavy losses, they're showing promising signs that they're investing in their juniors a little bit. And I think with the direction that Manurewa is heading, and I think they might get a job done this afternoon. It's a bit of a trek out to Howard Moody Park, but I think Manurewa will be up for it, and I think we might see them in the top flight.
And, of course, then we've got Otahu versus Marist Saints. I actually ran into Simon Eremia, who's the Marist Saints coach, and it's about twice this week, and so we've had a quick chat. And, of course, much as I like you, Simon, I think Otahu just too good.
Yeah, I suppose for these two sides, when they've already kind of qualified for the Fox Memorial Comp, there's not a whole lot riding on this game. But for a side like Marist, who always want to be up for a challenge, there's going to be no bigger challenge than today against a very stacked Otahu side. So it'll be a great challenge for us to see how Marist fronts up, but I think Otahu will just be a little bit too strong this afternoon.
Okay, we'll move on. Next, Mount Albert versus Otara Scorpions, Bay Roskill versus Hibiscus Coast. Mount Albert too strong for Otara Scorpions, and Bay Roskill, I think, will be too strong for Hibiscus.
Yeah, I think the Otara boys will just be wanting to front up. They've had a very challenging qualifying period. And speaking to a few of their players, they'll just want to finish the qualifying period on a high, whether they end up on the Fox Memorial or whether they see themselves in the second division this year. And similar to the Bay Roskill Hibiscus game, Hibiscus will just want to, front up. They drew against Otara, so they'll be no doubt thinking that they can put a challenge on Bay Roskill, but I think the Vikings will just be too strong at home against the Raiders.
Absolutely, and of course, then we move on to Manukau versus Howick, Ponsonby versus Northcote. Well, I have to say, I think Manukau will be too strong for Howick. I think there's some problems out there, Howick. They've gone down a bit, and Northcote, I think, too strong for Ponsonby. Could be causing a bit of an upset here.
Yeah, Paul C is going to have some really interesting clashes this afternoon. Lots of player turnover out at Howick, but I know that when you look at the standings, that all they've got to try and do is just win today, and they see they'll see themselves in the Fox. But Northcote going up against Ponsonby will want to try and cause some upset, and sort of ruffle the ladder up a bit against Ponsonby, obviously, who Ponsonby beating Howick a couple of weeks ago. So going to be really interesting to see how Paul C looks by this evening. I think we might see Ponsonby get a win over Northcote in a repeat of last year's Sharman Cup Grand Final, but I don't think you could count out Northcote, and who knows what we might see from Howick this afternoon. They could cause an upset, but I think Manukau will just be too strong.
I really can't see it at all, Joey. Anyway, Joey, thank you so much for making yourself available. And, of course, yesterday, Anzac Day, special day for you and your family.
Yeah, a very, very special day for our whānau yesterday and Anzac Day. My grandfather actually served in World War II and managed to, well, I wouldn't say managed to, but was a prisoner of war in the Second World War over in Europe as well. So very special occasion for our family, but a great way to celebrate those who sacrifice a lot to serve our country.
They certainly did, and you know what, it's a cracking day. It is a cracking day. So, you know, you enjoy the rest of your day. Are you refereeing any games today?
Yeah, I'll be out and about at a few grounds today, heading out to Trust Stadium to see some of the Jersey flag action.
Okay.
In a little bit. Great to see so high level football back in the country. But yeah, always will make time for local league today.
Absolutely, Joey. You have a wonderful weekend, and thank you for sharing some of your stories about your grandfather. So that was brilliant.
Always a pleasure to jump on, mate, and we'll chat again next week.
Good on you, man. Thanks a lot. That was Joey Green from Auckland Rugby League. Next up, we will be talking to Sir Wayne Shelford, who is the president of the RSA Association.
Although you're getting on in years and memories seem to disappear, some things will never fade away, some memories will stay. There's one day in each year you will not forget. If this is your last year, we will not forget. One more parade, one less digger by your side. One year you're marching, the next year you ride. Hold your head. Lest we forget. It seems a long, long time ago, a young man far away from home, friends made and lost along the way. Some memories will stay. Those who died, those who live, you will not forget. If this is your last year, we will not forget. One more parade, one less digger by your side. One year you're marching, the next year you ride.
Welcome everyone back to the Planet FM Sports Weekender. And yesterday was a very, very special day for both New Zealand and Australia, Anzac Day. And it is a real day of reflection, a real day of remembrance. Here to join us is, he was not only one of our great All Blacks, a great leader, but also he is the current president of the RNZ RSA. It's a great privilege to have him on. Sir Wayne Shelford, good morning to you.
Good morning.
It's great to have you on, Sir Wayne. I know you've been as busy as hell in the last 24 hours, so it's thank you for making yourself available. You know, we look at this day, and we look at this day in New Zealand. This day is so important, and I call it a day of reflection. Just some of your views around Anzac Day. I think it's just so special.
Well, you know, I'm actually, when I was a young fella, grew up in Rotorua, and basically I did actually go to a lot of Anzac Days in Rotorua with my father as a young guy, and I didn't really know what it was going on about, but you know, over the years you actually do start learning, and basically then I joined the military, and I spent a lot of time at Anzac Days in the military, that's for sure. But yeah. You know, we actually, you know, you learn all about it when you're in the military, that's for sure, and what goes on and why, and you know, And we're actually, we joined ourselves up with the Australians and went to the First World War, Second World War, all those sorts of things. And, you know, it's one of those things. And, you know, 110 years ago now that started. And so in reflection, you know, we lost both countries, New Zealand as well. We actually lost a lot of people in the First World War. And, you know, they didn't get their medals when they got home and wear them. And so, you know, we actually commemorate them in our memories and thank them for what they've done. And, you know, then the ones that came home, many of them come home broken men and, you know, life wasn't great for a lot of them. And, you know, some of them lived on, you know, but at the end of the day, we all get old and, you know, we end up passing away because there's no one alive now from the First World War. Mm. So commemoration is huge. Not just for Gallipoli, but also for you know, the other wars as well that we've had since then. Yeah,
absolutely. And of course, you joined the Royal New Zealand Navy. And why did you join it? What was your reason to join the Royal? And were you inspired by some of the people, like you mentioned about in Rotorua, going to some of the Anzac Day memorial parades? Were they inspirations for you?
Well, not so much going there, but when you were starting to learn about it, you know, and I was really basically making a mind up whether to go into the police force or to join the Navy. And basically what turned it was probably my phys ed teachers at college. So I had 4 years at college, and both my phys ed teachers were ex-Navy, you know, chief petty officers. and they were both PDIs, and I wanted to join as a PDI. So I did join, but you couldn't join up as a PDI in my time.
Yeah.
The Army boys could, but, you know, in the Navy you've got to have be passed for command as a leader. The leading hand, which is a corporal, to be able to take charge of people. And, you know, I waited another like 5 years before I could change branches and become a PDI for the rest of my time in, which I've done 11 and a half years there.
Yeah, and...
But, you know, a lot of inspiration from those guys too, because, you know, they travelled the world, they'd been operational as well, and all those sort of things. And you know, one of them's still alive and, you know, lives down in Gisborne. I catch up with him every now and then. Because he must be in his close to his 90s now, quite easily, yeah. Mm. And that's, you know, and it's always good to go and catch up with him down in the homies, yeah.
Yeah, because that was one of the questions I was going to ask you. You got to see the world with the Navy, but what were some of the important things you learnt from being by joining the Royal New Zealand Navy, which you carry on today?
Well, basically, you learn that you are basically a first responder for New Zealand, really. You know, we get called into conflicts all over the world. You know, back in the day, First World War, a little bit more in the Second World War, but in the Navy, you know, there to support the Army and the Air Force. Well, Air Force, we support the Army because they're the ones that go to land. We tend to stay on the ships outside and bombard from the outside. Yeah, and but we've been to a lot of conflicts over the last few years, and you know, when you reflect on it, you know, that's what you join for. You join to go to war, and you know that you could be called up at any time, any conflict, and you could be ordered to go overseas somewhere.
Very much so. I was just going to say, when we talk about Anzac and the Anzac spirit, and this is a sports show, Sir Wayne, but the importance of sports, like I remember a team many, many years ago in the old amateur days of rugby called the New Zealand Combined Services, where we had a mixture of the police force, the Royal New Zealand Navy, the Army, and so many different parts. You know, it's a pity that it did go in this professional era, but, you know, that to me was very, very special for rugby in this country.
Yeah, it was, and we still have. We don't call it combined services anymore. It's New Zealand Defence Force Rugby, because police have actually been, you know, knocked out. Well, stopped out of the tournament. Mm-hmm. Hang on. I'm just going to order a drink.
Can you order one for me while you're there?
Cappuccino. Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm just picking up my cappuccino.
Oh, okay. Well, if I knew that, you could have got me a flat white to send to Mount Albert, Sir Wayne.
Oh, I can't send it through a phone, bro. Sorry.
But
Combined Services was a great team. I captained them for a few years. And, you know, just getting together as rugby players and going on trips, or, you know, over to, I took the Combined Services over to England in 85. And we had a fantastic tour, and a lot of the memories were about the, you know, the Army boys and the Air Force and the Navy going to war over in Europe and things like that. And we've been, you know, we went and played in France as well on another tour. And, you know, we get to learn about the history of our people going to war, but at the same time, you know, they're fighting a war, but they're still playing rugby on the fields of where they're battling as well in their spare time when they get a bit of a break, you know. And I think the one of the greatest things that I learned was how the King George, after the First World War, got the Commonwealth countries together, Canada, New Zealand, Australia, South Africa, and England, Ireland, Scotland and Wales, and that, and said, let's, can you actually put on a rugby tournament for us? Because in England, it was actually, you know, being pulverized by the Germans. And basically, we went over there and we played in a rugby tournament, and that was deemed as the first ever World Cup.
Yeah,
well, and that cup is called the King George Cup, and we in Defence Force, we still play for that cup today.
Oh, that's brilliant. And, of course, we also look at the 1945-1946 Kiwis after the Second World War, which done a tour of Europe.
Yes, and that followed on too, exactly the same way, because it was about, you know, trying to build the build up the country's people and you know, get them going again, because they've all been smashed by, you know, a horrific war, and, you know, just getting them to smile again, because war is not a pretty thing. But to be able to watch a game of rugby and cheer different teams, whether it be your country, and, you know, we actually had a few All Blacks in that team too, as well. Freddie Allen was one of the coaches, I think, and a player. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we had some really top names of All Black rugby in our services teams during the First World War and Second World War.
Absolutely, and you were going on about that 85 Combined Services team. Now, there was a joker from Canterbury who was playing. He was an OK centre, ended up to be quite a good rugby coach. He was part of that team.
I can't remember.
Mr. Hanson, Steve Hanson.
Oh, Steve Hanson. No, he wasn't in that one. He was in the next one.
Oh, OK.
He didn't come out in the 85 one. He's just a boy in those days.
I'd love to see that conversation. You know, I can imagine Shag Hanson doesn't take a backward step to anyone. But if you said it, he'd definitely be taking a two or three backward steps.
I'm a bit older than him. But he wouldn't be able to play that position anymore. He'd have to play prop.
I really can't speak for myself, Wayne, because I'm sort of like looking like a bit like a Steve Hanson physique. But just in closing, Sir Wayne, Anzac Day just means so much for this country, and good on you for the stuff you're doing around the RSAs. And, you know, I always encourage people, as you know, we're a country of 5 million. If a million of us brought a poppy, we could really help some of the return servicemen.
Oh, you're right there. And it's, you know, it's a year, you're right. A call of $1 would make a big difference, wouldn't it? Yeah. And, you know, what a lot of people forget is that, you know, we actually do have times in our calendar in regards to all the conflicts that we've been to. You know, a lot of people have died since the First World War and the Second World War. You know, Vietnam, all those things. You know, we've had people die in all these conflicts, Afghanistan, you know, as well. And it's always going to happen. We will lose people all the time. But I remember just after this, I think it was after the Second World War or the First World War, that some general or somebody said that we'll never have any more than 1,000 operational servicemen. And in New Zealand currently now, we've got approximately close to 16,000 operational men and women who have been to conflicts. And so it's not getting any smaller, it's actually getting bigger.
And there are...
But the thing is, a lot of them are coming back from war. We don't lose the big numbers that we did back in the day, like the First World War, the Second World War. We might lose one or two or five or something like that, and then we come back into New Zealand and they just disperse as soon as they get back. There's no parades, nothing like that for them. They just disperse back into their units, and they go back to where they come from, have a couple of weeks off, and they're back to work again. You know, we don't see them with their heads are below the parapet once they come back to New Zealand. And then they only get involved in first responder stuff like the earthquakes, they get involved in those, fire, you know, things like that. And they support a lot of the councils and what they do in regards to those big earthquakes, eruptions that down in Whakaari, things like that. So we actually do get out there and we help out and all that sort of stuff and flooding, everything. And so, we are first responders to our country as well. And so we do the mahi and we're called upon to do a lot of mahi and please support the warriors, basically the vets. Yeah. And, I call them warriors as well because they're the tough men of New Zealand who are defending our country. Yeah.
Well, I have to say that's well said, Sir Wayne, and I'm going to call you Buck because I've met you a few times, and I think you don't mind being called Buck. And I have to say, I have to say that was just that I've really enjoyed this conversation today, and a lot of our listeners will. And you have a wonderful rest of the weekend, and maybe next year around the same time, if you're not too busy, we'll have a chat again.
Okay, thank you.
Cheers. Thank you very much. That was Sir Wayne Shelford. Fantastic, wasn't it? Anyway, next up we talk a bit of football with Seamus Martin.
He's a drover drifting over Western Plains. He's a city lad. They're in the trenches at Mount Vine and on the Flanders firing line. A wheeling band of ordinary men. He's all of them. He's one of us. Born beneath the Southern Cross.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend on Planet FM, and a big shout out to my good mate Robert Thompson from Barford and Thompson in the Epsom branch. Robert's got a great reputation. If you're looking to buy, if you're looking to sell, buy, advice on getting on this Auckland property market, Robert is the man to see. His number is 021 737 949, or you can email him r.thompson@barfords.co.nz. Well, we started off football, big weekend of football, and here to join us, he's the big guy from that little small podcast, Seamus Martin. And first of all, before we go any further, congratulations to you and Stephen for being nominated again.
Oh, thank you very much. That's very kind of you. Yeah, it's Yeah, so it's always nice to be recognised by those externally, but there you go. Let's put that aside. You reckon Rob will be going along to Go Media Stadium tomorrow to cheer Auckland FC?
Mate, Rob is there every time. Now, Rob, I know he's listening, and I can just imagine the smile on his face, because are you going to be there tomorrow?
Mate, I'm a season member, and if I'm not there, my brother's there. It is my partner's birthday tomorrow, so I'm going to have to pass it up. So
you
I'm
know
gonna
she's going to be the same age the next day.
She's encouraged me to go, but I said, no, look,
you have a damn caring wife. Anyway, it is a big weekend, and we're coming to the back end of the A-League, and of course, we might as well kick it off. Brisbane Roar versus Phoenix. Chiefy has been signed for another 2 years, and I have to say, I think it's a good decision. I think he, it wasn't his year this year, but he's really got to get the recruitment right. I really can see the Phoenix, maybe getting a bit of, maybe sampling up some pride and getting a result in Brisbane.
Yeah, I think that now that the speculation is over, I think that's a good thing for the playing group, and I'm sure they'll want to show their support for the coach in the game and a strong performance against Brisbane, who sit one place below them and 12th on that A-League ladder. Look, I can see both sides on this Chiefy re-signing. I think it's good continuity from the club. I do think the messaging about how great the performance was last year is actually completely irrelevant. I don't think fans or anybody really care about what happened last year. It's about what's happened this year and what happens from this point forward. You're spot on. They need to get their recruitment right, and the only thing that should be on their shopping list is goals. If they're to perform for next season, they need to find somebody, maybe two, maybe even three people that can get that ball in the back of the net, including Costa. Costa is a wonderful striker, but he needs support in that front third. Two games to go this season. It'd be nice to see them finish off with two wins and have some positivity going into that pre-season. But I think if things don't change radically early doors next season, I think there'll be a lot of pressure on Giancarlo Italiano. But look, with that game going ahead to Brisbane Roar, it is away. I'd like to see them win. It's an unchanged squad from last week, which is a good thing in his mind. So he's hoping for 3 points for the Wellington Phoenix later on this afternoon.
Yep, and of course Sunday, the big one. Now, I ran into a few of my friends at a function last night, a darts function, and of course a few of them had a bit of a pre-match tension 2 days out, but you know what? Who would have thought that we'd be talking that Auckland FC will be winning the premiership plate when they at the start of the season?
Oh, look, I don't think it was on anyone's bingo card that they'd be have such a stormer of a season and they'd find themselves in their position. But they could even find themselves having lifted that Premier's plate without kicking a ball if Adelaide United can do them a favour tonight against Melbourne City at 9:30. But it's always a nice thing to be able to secure a trophy in front of your home fans. So, but let's hope for the romantics, the sport romantics out there, that Melbourne City get the job done tonight, and it's left in Auckland FC's hands to defeat bottom place Perth Glory Go Media Stadium tomorrow afternoon, and they can have a bit of a celebration and maybe just breathe a little bit of a sigh of relief with one match to go in the regular season. But a phenomenal achievement, not only by the playing group, Steve Corica and his coaching staff, but I think the real unsung heroes, the people behind the scenes, the owners group, the marketing team, those that have forced Auckland FC into the forefront of a lot of not only football fans, but a lot of sports fans thinking this year. They've done a superb job, and they deserve all the credit that's coming their way.
Absolutely, and I think, when you look at it, I had an interview with David Dame last year, and he was honest. He said a lot of A-League teams basically don't make a profit. Well, I think this team has really made a good profit, and when you look at their merch in the Auckland region, they are the number one sellers of merch.
Oh, totally. I mean, even down here in Hamilton, you see the Auckland FC shirts around the place. So, every Saturday morning I go for a walk around the lake, and if it's a home game that weekend, I guarantee you I'll see three or four Auckland FC shirts going around that lake as well. So an absolute phenomenon that captured the imagination of a lot of people. And like I said, I think all credit is deserved. They've still got to go out on the pitch and do the job, though, Eamon. They can get their premiers, their hands on the Premier's plate tomorrow, and that's one thing. But if they win the Premier's plate and they don't go on and win the entire A-League, then there'll be a few disappointed people, I think.
I think there'll be a lot of disappointed people, especially a certain sugar daddy from AFC Bournemouth. Anyway, we move on to the Northern League, and these are the games today. Birkenhead versus Tauranga City, Eastern Suburbs versus Mangarewa, Auckland United versus East Coast Bays. Well, we might as well start at the top. You know, Birkenhead should go in as favourites at Shepherd's Park, but Tauranga have been a bit of a bogey team for some of these bigger teams in the league.
Yeah, they're really the overachievers at the moment, aren't they, Tauranga City? They're sitting in third place, taking on top of the league Birkenhead. I do think Birko will be too strong for them. But look, they're putting a season together at Tauranga. It is early days. You know, they've started with a hiss and a roar. But maybe an upset on the cards, but I think Birko will be too strong. Chasing Birko is Eastern Suburbs, who take on Manurewa, who are in 12th place. I think Easts are coming into their straps. I think they'll be title contenders. I think they'll really push Birkenhead all the way this year. I think Eastern Suburbs will win that game against Manurewa. And then Auckland United had two losses over Easter, so it was an Easter to forget for Jose Figuera and his team. They take on East Coast Bays, who are in 10th, and I think East Coast Bays are going to have another season where they're trying to fight off relegation. I think Auckland United should be too strong for Bays there, but I could see it also ending up as a draw.
Yep, that could happen. Anyway, we move on to the other games. Bay Olympic versus Western Springs, Auckland FC Reserves versus West Coast Rangers, Fencibles versus Auckland City FC. And I'm making sure I get it right because I don't want my friends down in Kiwi Tear Street biting my head off next time I'm there. But the first one, Bay Olympic versus Western Springs. Bay Olympic haven't had a bad start to the season.
Yeah, Pete Smith in charge of Bay Olympic in his first year after taking over from Rudy Mazar. Two mid-table teams. I think Bayo started very strongly in the first 4 weeks and then came up with a bit of a rough Easter patch. Western Springs were National League contenders last year. Don't forget, they're in seventh place. So that's sixth versus seventh. I think that one finishes in a draw. I think those two teams won't be separated. I think Auckland FC Reserves against West Coast Rangers, that's the bottom of the league clash already, although Auckland FC picked up a solid point last week too. I think West Coast Rangers might just have the experience, Chad Coombs aside, maybe spring in an upset against the upstarts from Auckland FC. And Fencibles versus Auckland City FC. Well, Auckland City on paper should be too strong for the newcomers in the Northern League, Fencibles. I'm picking the Navy Blues to win that one.
Absolutely. Then we move on to, then we have a look at Northern League Women's. Now, these have been some of the games that were played yesterday. And Ellerslie 2, Eastern Suburbs 2, West Coast Rangers 2, Fencibles 1. And that's a great turnaround for Fencibles after the drubbing they got at home from Auckland United. The two games we have over the weekend are Auckland United versus Western Springs, FC Tauranga versus Hibiscus Coast.
Yeah, well, let's start with that second game. You know, Tauranga versus Hibiscus Coast, that's eighth place, seventh. That's a relegation dogfight already. I think Tauranga really seem off the pace to me. I think it's going to be a difficult year. We saw Hamilton Wanderers really struggle last year as a team from outside of Auckland, and I think it's going to be Tauranga's turn this time. I think Hibiscus Coast make the long, long, long away trip down to the Bay of Plenty but come away with 3 points today, or tomorrow, I should say. And that Auckland United versus Western Springs game, well, Auckland United have 5 matches, 5 wins. This will be their last game before they jet off to Tahiti for the OFC Women's Champions League. I think Auckland United are too strong for everyone in this competition still, and they will beat Western Springs. But they are being pushed by West Coast Rangers, who, with that 2-1 win yesterday over Fencibles, are also 5 from 5 in that Women's Premier League. So they might be a little smoky to put a bit of pressure on Auckland United, especially if they keep winning while Auckland United are over in that Oceania competition in Tahiti.
Absolutely. And then we move on to the FA Cup semi-finals, Palace versus Aston Villa. And then a big one. We'll be keeping an eye on this one. Nottingham Forest versus Manchester City. You know what? And the rumours are swirling around Manchester City are going to be weakened, but you never. It could be old Pep trying to get into Nuno's mind, but, you know, wouldn't it be great to finally have a New Zealand footballer playing in an FA Cup final?
Oh, it would be unbelievable scenes if we were to see Chris Wood walk out at Wembley for the final. These semi-finals normally are played at Wembley, so he'll get an opportunity against Man City early hours on Monday morning. I see Man City start as heavy favourites in that one, but Nottingham Forest have shown already this season that they cannot be discounted. I think they're sitting in the Champions League places in the league, an FA Cup semi-final to look forward to, a Chris Wood that has come back into goal-scoring form against Tottenham Hotspur last weekend. It's all really, really nicely placed for just another chapter in a fantastic year already for New Zealand football. If Woodsy and Forrest can make their way to that FA Cup final, that would be magic. I think who they might play if they do win will be Aston Villa. They start as heavy favourites against Crystal Palace. And Villa, you know, they made it all the way to the quarterfinals of the UEFA Champions League as well. I think an Aston Villa Nottingham Forest has a really nice ring to it for an FA Cup final at Wembley, doesn't it?
Absolutely, that'd be fantastic. And then, of course, we move on to the EPL weekend, and we might as well kick it off on the Saturday game, or the Saturday games in England, Sunday morning games. Chelsea versus Everton, Wolverhampton Wanderers versus Leicester, Newcastle versus Ipswich.
Yeah, Chelsea-Everton seems like a Chelsea win to me, although they will have one eye on the UEFA conference semi-final that they've got coming up at the end of the week. So they might rest a few players against Everton who are sitting in 13th, but I think Chelsea should be too strong in that game and they will win at Stamford Bridge. Wolves versus Leicester. Well, there's only the only talk out of Leicester this week has been Jamie Vardy, hasn't it? And his decision, it seems, to move on and end his time at Leicester City. I think off the back of that that announcement that Leicester will get up and they will beat Wolves, even though their relegation was confirmed last week after defeat at Liverpool. So I'm picking Leicester to win that one against Wolves. And was it Newcastle Ipswich? Is that the other one we're looking at, or Brighton West Ham?
Newcastle Ipswich.
Yeah, well, look, Newcastle are flying, aren't they? Fifth spot going into the weekend. They've got an opportunity with Nottingham Forest not in action until later on in the week. I think Newcastle will defeat Ipswich, who are trying to stave off relegation, but they're miles behind. They're miles behind the eight ball at the moment. I think West Ham are sitting in 17th, so Newcastle will win that one. And I've already made mention of Brighton versus West Ham, so I may as well go there now. I think the Seagulls Brighton will be too strong for West Ham, who will stay in the Premier League in my mind, but they won't rise higher than 17th place.
And then we look Southampton versus Fulham. Well, I suppose you'd have to go for Fulham there, Seamus.
Bournemouth versus Manchester United.
Well, I'm calling Bournemouth to beat Manchester United.
I agree with you. I think Bournemouth will beat Manchester United, but I only think that is because Man United also will have an eye on Europe, just as Chelsea do, and like Tottenham Hotspur will as well. They've got that semi-final in the Europa League against Athletic Bilbao coming up away in Spain on Friday. So I think Ruben Amorim's probably, that's his only chance at silverware, and I think he'll be throwing all of his efforts into that semi-final. So I think he can afford, they're not going to go down Man United, so I think he can afford to drop points against Bournemouth. I don't think they'll want to drop points against Bournemouth, but if it was the case, Bournemouth, who are sitting in eighth, have a lot more to play for in the league if they can try and squeak a place into Europe by sneaking up a few places in the final stages of the Premier League.
And, of course, you guys are going to win it. Hate to say it.
Well, this is the when we started on the Premier League, I was about to stop you midstream and say there's only one match we're going to be talking about for this weekend, isn't it? And that's when Liverpool's coronation is completed at Anfield.
Yeah, well, I'm going to hear it. I've already got a couple of mates who are Liverpool supporters. Garth Galloway, who covers our cricket, Liverpool supporter. Watto, Liverpool supporter. He's on at the end of the show, so it's hard enough to get our Watto to stop Watto talking, and he loves Liverpool. So, yeah, congratulations. You've been the best team in the EPL.
Look, it's a little bit similar to Auckland FC, isn't it? You want to lift the title. You want to confirm your place in front of your home fans. The last time Liverpool won the Premier League, if you cast your mind back, was during the COVID era. There was no fans at Anfield. This will be a nice way, I think, for the Kop to be able to celebrate for some of these Liverpool squad members. They've re-signed two of the big ones, Virgil van Dijk and Mohamed Salah. The last piece of the puzzle is Trent Alexander-Arnold, who I don't think will re-sign, although maybe he will. You know, it depends on how you go. But he scored the winner last week against Leicester and avoided any talk of contract extension. So if Liverpool do win the title against Ange Postecoglou's Spurs, then I think that becomes the only story, is whether Trent will re-sign going into the final stages of the season. But Spurs, a little bit like Man United. They've got that Europa semi-final coming up against Bodo Glimt of Norway. Ange Postecoglou says he always wins trophies in his second season, and the only thing he can possibly win is that Europa League. So, yeah, I can see that game being a little bit like the Bournemouth-Man United game, with one team with everything to play for and the other team perhaps with an eye on another competition coming up later in the week and wanting to make sure they arrive at that big game in the best possible condition.
Seamus, enjoy your weekend. Thank you so much. And once again, congratulations on your nomination for Podcast of the Year with Between Two Bears Podcast with Seamus and his good mate Stephen Holloway. So congratulations, man.
Oh, beautiful. Hey, thank you very much. I'm going to enjoy a little bit of live football this afternoon, a local derby down here in the Waikato in the old NRFL Men's Championship. Melville United, my mighty, mighty Melville, up against Ngāti United out at Centennial Park. So I'll be braving the rain, but I'll be sideline getting in some football before those big clashes tomorrow afternoon with Auckland FC and that Liverpool one in the early hours of Sunday morning.
Yep, have a good weekend, man, and we'll catch up next week.
Awesome.
Cheers, mate.
Bye.
Seamus Martin, he's brilliant. He's just very, very lucky to have him and Noel Barkley and even Brendan McNeice, fantastic, fantastic football analyst. I don't know whether Seamus will be happy to be compared with my old mate McNeice. Anyway, we'll play a bit of music. Next up, we go across to Australia and we speak to Gordon Bray.
Now when I was a young man, I carried a pack and I lived the frail life of the rover. From the Murray's green base to the dusty outback, I waltzed my Matilda all over. Then in 1915, my country said, son, there's no time for roving, there's a work to be done. So they gave me a tin hat and they gave me a gun. And they sent me away to the war. And the band played Waltzing Matilda as our ship pulled away from the quay. And amidst all the tears, flag waving and the cheers, we sailed off for Gallipoli. And well, I remember that terrible day when our blood stained the sand and the water. And how in that hell that they called Suvla Bay, we were butchered like lambs at the slaughter. Johnny Turkey was waiting and he primed himself well, and he shot us with bullets and he rained us with shell. And in 10 minutes flat, we were all blown to hell. Nearly blew us back home to Australia. And the band played Waltzing Matilda as we stopped to bury our slain. And we buried ours, and the Turks buried theirs. And it started all over again.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend. The band plays Waltzing Matilda. Yep, it's around this time on Anzac Day we hear this song, and it's a beautiful song when you think about it. Tragic in many ways. Here to speak to us, as he does every month, about Australian sports, but I know this day means a lot to him. Please welcome legend of Australian broadcasting, Gordon Bray. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Eamon. Yes, it certainly stirs the emotions, doesn't it? The spirit of the Anzacs, the courage, the endurance, the camaraderie. the shared values. I think it's our powerful sense of national identity, the Aussie diggers, the Kiwi diggers. I visited Anzac Cove with my wife. We spent 2 hours just absorbing the loss of life, the senseless loss of life, really, the names and the ages of the Aussies and the Kiwis. One was 15 years of age. Apparently the youngest ever Aussie at Gallipoli killed was only 14, but he put his age up. But New Zealand lost nearly 3,000 soldiers in the Gallipoli campaign. Australia lost 8,700 soldiers. So it was a horrendous loss of life. And if I can just quickly, I was reading an account of one of the Australian diggers at Gallipoli, A.B. Facey. And he told the story how he had a large piece of shrapnel embedded in one side of his face and into the roof of his mouth. It knocked out a lot of teeth. Several of the other teeth were loose. He had to go down to the beach dressing station, and the doctor said, we'll have to send you to the hospital ship. And he said, no, just pull the bloody teeth out. Three strapping orderlies held him down with no anaesthetic. Don't send me out to that ship. I don't want to leave my mates. We're very shorthanded. Some antiseptic cream was applied to the wounds. They wrapped his head and his jaw in bandages, and he returned to the front line. So that's the spirit of the Anzacs, Eamon. And it was certainly in force, wasn't it, in the Super Rugby matches in Australia and New Zealand.
Absolutely. Just before we go then, I'm just going to read you something, Gordon, and it's a very, very special. Musapa Kamel Atuk, he wrote this in 1934. Those heroes that shed their blood and lost their lives, you are lying in the soil of a friendly country. Therefore, rest in peace. There's no difference between the Johnnies and the Mamets. To us, they lie side by side. Here in this country of ours, you, the mothers who sent their sons from faraway countries, wipe your tears away. Your sons are now lying in the bosom and are in peace. They, after losing their lives on this land, they have become our sons as well. Beautiful, isn't it?
Just beautiful. I mean, separated by the Tasman Sea, but brothers in arms. Wonderful. Yeah.
And I have to say, well, the Super Rugby, it was a tale of two games when we looked at it, Gordon. You have a look at it, like Harry Potter did a bit of magic in Mount Maunganui. And, of course, then I have to say, and I was speaking to AJ Whetton earlier, Joe Smith is in a better position probably than Razor is when he's looking for combinations for halfback first 5-8, because if you saw the display of Tate McDermott and Tom Liner, well, you know, he's got so many choices here.
Yeah, well, I thought I was looking at Michael Liner, the skills of young Tom. I think he's only just turned 22 this month. And don't forget, he's been raised in England, so he's come through the English education system. But he's an absolute chip off the old block. He seems to have all the skills. He's only pretty light. He's 83 kilograms. But certainly they've kept him in cotton wool. I think they've managed him very well. Whether he's ready to take on the Lions, that's another question. Other names that have been thrown about, certainly Bernard Foley is playing in Japan at the moment, and I think there have been some reconnaissance there as to how he's performing. But it's such a crucial position. Even James O'Connor, I guess, is in the mix there somehow. Yeah. And Ben Donaldson probably lost a little bit of caste in that match against the Chiefs last night. But, yeah, certainly Tom Liner and Tate McDermott, I think, has really stepped up now as the number one contender. And the area that where he has improved has been his box kicking, which is such a huge part of the game. I think the accuracy of his box kicking has certainly gone up a notch. So, yeah, there are certainly plenty of options there for Joe Smith. Whether Tom Liner's ready to go, that remains to be seen. But certainly he was very impressive last night.
Now, I've also just been reading on the wires that obviously this has been a great year for all four franchises within Australian franchises, but there are new rugby league franchises, obviously Papua New Guinea, but the Western Bears, as they'll be known, based in Perth and North Queensland, apparently they're trying to nobble a few players.
Well, I think you saw Mark Nawangata-Tuase last night for the Roosters in their very big victory The Roosters downing St George 36-18, and you know, the ex-Wallaby on the wing has really, he's only had half a dozen games for the Roosters, but he's an all-action man, and it's really underlined the point of the value of some of the top rugby players. So yeah, the Western Bears have already named Brad Arthur as their coach. And it's been suggested they should be looking at rugby players, and not only here in Australia and New Zealand, but also in South Africa and Argentina, because they're such great athletes, and you know, they're ready to go. So that's certainly a bit of a scare through Australian rugby ranks. There's plenty of money there with the Western Bears.
Now, this young sprinter, Gout Gout, now I hope I pronounce it right, Gout Gout, he has, this kid's a freak.
He's an absolute freak. He's just 17 years of age. He's still at school. He's at Ipswich Grammar. And what, he's won the Australian 200 metres title in Perth in 19.84 seconds. That was with wind assistance. He's also run a wind-assisted 100 metres of 9.99 seconds. And as you say, where has this guy come from? He was born in Australia. He's South Sudan heritage. He's not as tall as Usain Bolt. He's 1.88 metres, but he's only 17 and he's still growing. And he's been selected for the Australian Open men's track and field team for Tokyo in September, and he'll be running in the 200 metres. But he certainly is a sensation. He's been signed by Adidas, and we're very excited about Gout Gout.
Yes, and of course, then looking at some other news, obviously, the Australian Olympic boss, John Coutts, he's really revealed so much in the last few days, hasn't he, Gordon?
Yeah, there's a feature article in The Australian today, which is worth sourcing. But John Coutts comes from a rowing background. He was actually a cox in a four at my old school. We were actually schoolmates together. But he is vice president of the Brisbane Organising Committee. He's been the right-hand man for Thomas Bach, the former Olympic president. And he's revealed in this article how he's had a seven-year battle with three different types of cancer. He's had to survive a challenge to his position as president of the AOC. And he revealed about some of the treachery there with some of the sports that he'd supported all the way through, sports like hockey and equestrian, how they voted against him when he was challenged by Danny Roach, the former hockey roo. So he doesn't pull his punches. He talks of how they actually paid African countries in the bid for the Sydney 2000 Olympics, how they paid money of $35,000 to go to junior development in those African countries, and how he was approached by many countries, offered bribes to give his vote to those countries. So it's a fascinating article. But John Coates has always been true to himself. He's never pulled his punches, and his loyalty, I think, has been the thing that has really stood him in great stead. He's a lawyer by profession, and he has to rank as one of the finest sports administrators Australia's ever produced, and he's right up there at the elite level globally too.
Absolutely, and you know, when you think about it, you know, you speak about the IOC, you can probably compare FIFA with that. They're two very prestigious organisations, but you know, when you look at some of the people being involved, a used car salesman probably has more credibility.
Yeah, well, I think there certainly was credibility under Thomas Bach and John Coates. A lot of that stuff, that murky stuff, was addressed. And with transparency and honesty, and so I think there've been, you know, some positive advances in that regard. And now, with the first time with a female IOC head, a very capable lady, I think that's going to be a very positive development because she's a person who's always been not afraid to make a statement and have an opinion and stand by it. So I think, yeah, the IOC have had their problems, but I think they're on the right track now.
I think they are too. And of course, I was reading an interesting article, the North Bondi RSL. They decided as part to band two up on Anzac Day in Sydney. Now, you know, that's been a tradition that has been around for so long. And, you know, I had a wee chuckle to myself while they banned that, saying, oh, it's, we don't want to encourage this and that. They've also got a gaming room there.
I mean, that is just amazing.
It's double standards, isn't it?
It's double standards, and it's wokeism, isn't it? It's
terrible.
It's crazy stuff. I mean, two up is tradition with the diggers. It's part of our heritage. It only really happens on Anzac Day. Some of the casinos around the country still have a bit of a two up pit, but yeah, it's all about the heritage, the memories, the sacrifice, and if people want to play two up to celebrate the Anzac spirit, so be it. No plaudits at all to the North Pond IRSL.
Yeah, just when I looked at it, and I heard it on another show from Australia earlier on this during the week, and I thought RSLs, and I was just thinking, will they shut down the gaming machines on Anzac Day? I bet you they don't.
No way in the world. I mean, they're worth too much money, aren't they? They keep the clubs afloat. So yeah, double standards, and the wrong people are making those decisions.
Yeah, and sadly, in the world we are now, I suppose they see us as dinosaurs, Gordon. Anyway, Gordon, just how did you spend your Anzac Day yesterday?
Well, my wife is in New York at the moment. She's on a girls' trip. It had been an annual trip where they love to go and go to shows and go to museums and art galleries and restaurants. And it was stopped due to COVID, but they've been able to reactivate it. So I'm a bachelor. I'm up on the Central Coast, and I watched the Super Rugby games last night. I watched the game from Mount Maunganui and also the game from Suncorp Stadium. And I love the Anzac ceremony before that game, which was so appreciated by the players. And I love the fact that Barry Lee, the First Nations man, stood alongside the Auckland players for their national anthem, the New Zealand national anthem, and then the Australians. And all of those little children, boys and girls, there holding the hands of the players of both sides. Now, it was very moving, and it certainly was a wonderful tribute.
I'm going to say this, Gordon. You know, I believe the way sports is on Anzac Day in Australia, it's just so much better than what we can do here. I think we, you know, we don't have the same, and it's a sad thing to say, at times I don't think we have the same nationalism.
Yeah, well, I won't put my toe in the water on that one. Because
I said it, mate.
Yeah, New Zealand's nationalism and I guess sense of national identity to me is second to none. But when it comes to the Anzac, I think it's a good reminder of what happened last night at Suncorp Stadium. It's a good reminder for New Zealanders how we need to give full respect to Anzac Day and the ultimate sacrifice made by our Aussie and Kiwi diggers.
Absolutely. Well, Gordon, thank you so much for making yourself available. I hope you enjoy the rest of your weekend. Behave yourself while your lovely wife's away, and I'll just have a quick chat to you off air.
Yeah, terrific, Eamon. And I'm looking forward to the big one today in Canberra, where the Brumbies take on the Hurricanes. That should be a magnificent contest.
Yeah, well, and, yes. There
yeah,
is.
That should be a beauty. I'm not tipping anything there, but certainly the Brumbies will be hard to beat. But the Hurricanes are desperate, aren't they? They've got to have a win here at this point.
Well, they have to, and I really believe that, you know, what was it? I just believe that, you know, they just have to win because, you know, we've really fallen behind the Australian teams in this competition. Anyway,
well, I think the Chiefs and the Crusaders are up the top of the table. They're the two front runners at the moment, so you're still hanging in there. Don't worry about that.
Okay, cheers. Okay, well, cheers, Gordon. Have a great weekend. I'll just have a quick chat.
Thanks, Evan, and nice to speak to you and your audience.
Thank you very, very much. Yeah.
vision that shares a dream. We are one nation that shares a dream, and with pride.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekender, and it's a great pleasure to have the panel here today on line one. The man, the legend, Mark Watson, good morning to you.
Morning to you, and I'm very looking very much to having a conversation with West Ham's finest.
Absolutely, and I know why you're excited, and because on Monday morning you'll be very happy. And there he is, our favourite English broadcaster in New Zealand, Miles Davis. How are you, mate?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. I mean, I'm excited to chat to Watto as usual, but the fact that he's a Scouse kid does put a bit of a damper on it.
And you're not excited to talk to me?
No. Who is, Piggy?
Yeah. Thanks a lot, mate. I do it a lot for sleep apnea and insomnia. Anyway, we might as well kick it off. Listen, Anzac Day in sports in New Zealand, I'm going to, compared to our neighbours in Australia, I think we really dropped the ball. You know, yesterday was a perfect opportunity to maybe move the Warriors game to an earlier time, maybe have a 2:30 game or a 3 o'clock game, maybe put in a Super Rugby game, an extra on this day. I feel that we really dropped the ball. And when we look at Anzac Day, the way it's celebrated at sports venues, it doesn't drive the same passion in Australia. I'll start off with you, Mark.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think it was disappointing yesterday for Warriors fans who have waited so long for, an Anzac Day to be at home, and they go and take it down to Christchurch. Now, they got away with the victory, and I'm sure the fans in Christchurch would have enjoyed that. Just as a side note, you know, I'm pleased they did win, because I just, you know, I think taking it away, it almost feels like an away game, and I think you give up that home advantage and you're in a competition dealing with really small percentages. But look, you know, look, I just generally don't think we do sport that well in this country compared to Australia, full stop. You know, we had long weekends, haven't we, last weekend with Easter. You know, we had Super Rugby, we had four Super Rugby games on one day and one on a Friday night. You know, why haven't we got one on a Thursday night, one on a Friday night, one on a Saturday night, and one on a Sunday, or potentially Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday? I'm not somebody who can sit down and watch four games of rugby. I'm good for one game, and therefore, you know, one each day would actually be a really nice promotion of the sport, particularly in holiday time, particularly when you probably got more eyeballs and people a little bit more relaxed and are actually happy to sit back and watch some sport.
Miles,
Yeah, no, I agree with everything basically that Wattos said. There's a couple of things, really, is that I agree with the Warriors going down to Christchurch, and I know it's the New Zealand Warriors and they're trying to, you know, sort of bring everyone in and be inclusive. But the reality is, if I'm a season ticket holder at Mount Smart, then I want to see all the home games. And I'd much rather, if they're trying to engage everyone else, go to Air New Zealand, go to Jetstar or whatever and say, look, this is a game's going to be, you know, we're going to encourage all the Canterbury, we're going to get a great deal with the hotel group, with this and that, and put packages together to bring Canterbury or Wellingtonians or Dunedinites, or even if we're going to go all the way down to that village down the bottom, get Invercargill up here, and do it that way. As far as the Anzac Day thing goes, it just amazes me. I mean, why don't we come up with more of these traditional things? I mean, it'd be great to have a Australia-New Zealand clash on that day. I know a couple of times they've had a bit of a league sort of bash around that sort of time. I seem to remember the Warriors used to play Melbourne Storm a lot on Anzac Day. I don't know what happened there as far as I said, they got the Knights instead. But why not encourage it and say, look, even down, you know, have Anzac Day Memorial Sports up and down the country and try and get local rivals drawn against each other so that, you know, it adds a little bit of an extra spice to it. You all think about that. And also, I don't know what I think about this, is that the one thing that's always got me is, like, I doubt if one individual that made the sacrifice, whether it was with their life or with their sanity or whatever it was, you know, that went to war in the First World War, I don't think one of them has said, I'll tell you what, I want to be remembered by no kids playing sport before midday.
Yeah.
I just, it's beyond me. I just cannot do it. I mean, they fought for freedoms and we should be out there celebrating it and doing it. And, I think that's what we should be doing. And I really think we should, on a sporting level, let's just try and bring it down to a local level. We don't necessarily need the Aussies involved. You know, there's plenty of Kiwis went over and sacrificed themselves. But let's really make a thing of it.
Yeah. Just touching on that again, you know, we got Wellington, you know, we got Auckland and Wellington Phoenix playing in the A-League. Wouldn't that be a local derby clash we could have on the Anzac Day?
Oh, that'd be great.
You go back to the history of the Warriors, our very first game was against the Broncos. Let's bring the Broncos over here and make that the annual fixture. Obviously, if we get a second franchise at some point, you could make that a bit of a local derby. And I'm with Miles. I mean, I think most New Zealanders just on Anzac Day, whether it be 12 o'clock, whether it be 10 o'clock, you know, I think if you think of the spirit of the Anzacs and you think of the average New Zealander and those that have gone out there, you know, sport is a big part of it, and I think it's a really nice way to bring community and people together, a really nice day to remember. I looked at, and we went off on a little bit of a tangent, but just with the Warriors, I've been having this debate. Look, it is an Auckland-based franchise. You can call it a New Zealand team. It's not a New Zealand team. It's an Auckland team, and we'll find that out pretty quickly if we do get a second franchise out of Christchurch. But taking it down to Christchurch and somehow trying to demonstrate to the NRL, look at the fan base in Christchurch, let's have a second team down there. Look, that's not the Warriors' job to do that. I'm with Miles on this. You're a ticket holder. You know, we're seeing teams lose every week. This is a home game, man. You know, you got your best chance at home. You're dealing with small percentages. Here's the Warriors team having to get on a plane, having to get into hotels, playing on a bit of a foreign ground. And I just don't believe in putting performance decisions ever ahead of commercial decisions. And I feel that was a commercial decision.
Yeah, exactly. And remember what happened when they used to play down here at Wellington at the Cake Tin? They used to play a lot of those games, and it was Bulldogs home games. And the Bulldogs, I think, for the first five or six of them, whatever, always won. So, yeah. So for, you know, from that point of view, it's stupid as well. But they do the same. It's the New Zealand Breakers, isn't it? You know, so they try and sort of encompass everyone. But you can still live down. I mean, I support the Warriors, and I live down here, so in Wellington. So there you go.
Yeah, but I think sometimes they use that word New Zealand to be a bit cheeky, maybe just in terms of a marketing ploy, trying to go to commercial
partners. Yeah, no, very much so.
We've got this national reach, and you go, well, actually, it's still an Auckland-based franchise.
Anyway, we move on. We digress. We talk a bit of football. Well, of course, we've got Auckland FC. Just need 1 point to secure the A-League Premiership plate. Then we have Chris Wood here in the semi-finals on Monday morning for Nottingham Forest versus Manchester City. Wouldn't it be great to see Chris Wood walking out on Wembley on FA Cup Day? And unfortunately, it's going to happen. And I know, Mark, I can sense the heavy breathing that Liverpool will win the EPL and probably well deserved. I'm going to let Miles start off because I know that Watto's going to go for it about Liverpool.
I'm not going to argue with them. They've undoubtedly been the best team in the Premier League this season. They play a really good brand of football. None of this too much of the ticker-tacker. They're really looking to attack. They've got some magnificent players. And when you consider, you know, sometimes you look at Man United, you know, you look at the dynasty of Alex Ferguson and the disasters they've had ever since, continuing probably in its best form this year. And Arne Slot came in, and it's not only been seamless, they seem to have stepped up another level. And I just, you know, you can't but commend it. The only disappointment for me, they cheated to get a win against West Ham the other week up at Anfield. But B, that they haven't gone all the way in Europe, you know, because that's the sort of side, and I appreciate, you know, that they've been stretched on a lot of fronts, but I would have liked to have seen them just kick on a little bit and go on in Europe.
Mark, I know you got the sweaty palms at the moment, and they're going to win it. As a Liverpool fan, you must be happy, delighted.
Oh, look, absolutely delighted. Look, I've been a Liverpool fan since I was at primary school, about 1976. I didn't really start to appreciate the club until I was in my 80s, even though arguably the best years were in the late 70s. I had a friend of mine who turned up to school in a Liverpool shirt, and I think that's how I became a Liverpool fan. And it's been a tough sort of last 30 years, only the one Premier League title really since, what, about 1989 or so. It's interesting. There's been a few doom and gloom merchants in the UK saying, oh, look, this Premier League season's been a bit average, you know, four games to go, Liverpool are going to wrap it up, the bottom three teams have already been decided, and, you know, it's not been one of the great campaigns. And you just sit back and go, hang on a minute. At the start of the season, those same very people were talking about Liverpool possibly finishing third or fourth. They had Arsenal definitely ahead of us. They definitely had Manchester City ahead of us. But I just go, you know, sometimes you need 10 years to look back. But you go, look, you've got Andy Robertson there, captain of Scotland. You've got Konate, you know, played in a World Cup final for France at a young age. You've got Virgil van Dijk, arguably the greatest centre-back in the game, captain of the Netherlands. Then you go across, you know, you've got Alexander-Arnold in high demand from Real Madrid. Then you've got Mo Salah. You've got Dominic Szoboszlai in midfield there. You've got Alexi McAllister from Argentina. You look at Luis Diaz out of Colombia. I mean, it's a hell of a side on paper. And they do deserve it. They deserve it. I don't care whether we win it with 10 games to go or whether we win it on the last day. You just want to win it. You know, I don't think anybody picked Manchester City to maybe capitulate the way they did in the middle of the season. Arsenal, I mean, you know, they could, you know, you can have the debate, what's bigger, winning the Champions League or winning the Premier League? And they're clearly still in the semi-finals. They've got to get past PSG, who I think could end up winning the whole thing. But look, I'm absolutely delighted. Look, I take on board what Miles said. I mean, you know, we showed so much promise in Europe and then came up against a very good PSG side and ended up losing that one narrowly. But I think that will be the focus for Liverpool next year. I think will be the Champions League very much. Yeah, and so maybe throw it back over to Miles for some domestic.
Yeah, just a couple of bits on that Liverpool. I mean, you mentioned all that side, and you didn't even mention, you know, you didn't have even time to mention the likes of Gravenberg and Gakpo and Nunes and Jota. I mean, Jota would be a starter in most sides, and they come up with a bit of score, so they really have got depth. And you know, Connor Bradley, all those youngsters they've got there as well, so they're doing brilliantly. But well, the final thing on this that I'll pick up is, and this is the same, ask the Liverpool Man United fans that live over here. Oh, no, I support them in the bad times. 76-77, they won the bloody league and the European Cup. So don't start saying, oh, no, they were poverty-stricken when I started watching them.
Hey, just quickly, guys. Chris Wood, wouldn't it be great to see Nottingham Forest make that final?
Look, 100%, mate. The guy has just got better and better. I mean, he's been like a journeyman. He's been through all the clubs. He's played in the Championship. He's been back in the Premier League. You think that his sort of career at the top level's over, then he gets another chance and he does the business there. He was successful at Burnley. But now he's really, I mean, and they're not in the Forest side, they're far outperforming any expectations for him. And they're doing it as a team. But just to watch him, he's on, I think, 19 goals at the moment. Like, you get 20 goals in the season up there in the Premier League for a Premier League side, you're really doing it. I was trying to think back the last time West Ham had a player that scored 20, and do you know when that was? In the mid-80s. You
know? So, who was it? Tony Cotty?
Yeah, it's Cotty and Frank McAvinny. But, you know, it's just a, you know, superb performance. They're going to have to really battle. I think it'll be a backs against the wall and a break to beat City. But, hey, the way they're going, wouldn't it be brilliant?
Oh, it'd be awesome. What do you think?
Yeah, look, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because Forest are also fighting for, you know, Champions League. Five teams go through, and there's this debate about, do you want to make Champions League next year or do you want to win the FA Cup? I'll tell you, for a team like Nottingham Forest, they want to win the FA Cup. You want to win a trophy. Better to have one in the hand than two in the bush. Yes, financially, absolutely, you want to make Europe. And there's no reason why they can't do both. I think they're going to come up against a very tough Manchester City side that are starting to find their form. I mean, they've never been a bad team, have they? I mean, it's still just such a quality lineup. But, boy, I tell you what, this is played, obviously, at Wembley too, so it is a bit of a neutral venue for both teams. There's no home advantage here. But, yeah, I just think it'd just be a great story for New Zealand football of just Chris Wood. I think, you know, obviously we've had some very, very good footballers over the years, and it was carried very much by Winton Roofer and, you know, and we've had...
Ryan Nelson
there for Blackburn Rovers and various players coming through, but not to the same degree. I mean, he is one of the most talked about players in the Premier League this season. He is a pin-up boy for the English Premier League. Chris Wood is a huge name over there. And I don't think here in New Zealand we quite grasp just how good you've got to be to get into a Premier League team. When you think about how many kids play football, this is a guy that came out of Cambridge, man, and here he is scoring 20 goals in the Premier League. And why we don't recognise him, and I put Stephen Adams in the same mix, why these guys are not recognised at a much higher level when it comes to Hellberg times is just beyond me. Not everything is always that tangible in terms of measuring, you know, measuring the magnitude of someone's achievement. And there are just... Now, there are just certain sports that just carry that much more weight than others in terms of, you know, trying to get to the top in them.
Yeah, your thoughts on that, Miles?
Yeah, I know, 100%. And I followed it. I remember him, you know, as a 20-year-old, raw-boned and scoring, pulling his undies down at North Harbour Stadium when he scored against Honduras with Woodsy written on the back of his underwear. I thought this guy's raw-boned, you know, but he hasn't really got the wherewithal yet. Let's see how he develops. And he's developed even better than I thought he was going to. And I love the fact that he comes back every time to play for his country. You know, a lot of players over there, and his clubs are good at letting him go, but the players got to make the demands. And we saw, like with Winston Reid and at West Ham, you know, he stays over there, and they don't come back, most of them, but he does every time. And I think that's a real testament to his character and you know, his integrity.
Absolutely. Now we're getting there. Auckland FC could win the Premiership plate. Yep, it's great to win it, but I think if you've got that, you want to go past that semi-final. Do you want to be in that grand final?
Of course you do. I mean, you always want to win the battle, but ultimately you want to win the war. And it's not going to mean too much if you don't need to actually end up going on and winning the A-League. It'll have significance because it's the first year for this club and you've automatically got a trophy and therefore you've automatically sort of kicked off a bit of a legacy. Look, you wish them all the very best, don't they? I mean, I struggle watching the A-League because I'm so used to watching the Premier League and I just simply don't find the standard anywhere in comparison. But I think why you get involved in the A-League is because of the tribalism, because of that connectedness towards your particular team. And for those reasons, you know, I've now started to take an interest in the A-League because of what Auckland are doing. I've just got to say, the save the other week from Alex Paulson against the Melbourne Victory was one of the best goalkeeping saves I have ever seen from any goalkeeper in any form of the game. Simply remarkable when we're up by 1-0. We ended up winning that game 2-0. But man, that guy is genuinely world class.
Miles.
Yeah, I remember four or five years ago watching Alex Paulson playing in the National League, and I thought at the time, this kid looks, you know, got a lot of promise. Gave me a few heart attacks playing out from the back, but that's the way modern way for goalkeepers nowadays. But the guy is brilliant, and you look at the Phoenix, and they were so bitter about the way that it happened. They sold him to Bournemouth, and then the owner of the Bournemouth is the same owner of Auckland FC, and he just goes, "Oh, I tell you what, we'll send him back over there." But the fact is, they got, 3 or 4 million for him. So you can't, you know, you sold him. It doesn't matter where he ends up. You actually sold him, so they shouldn't have been there. But they've been, I mean, it's been a real injection of in the arm for New Zealand football. And like what I said, you know, to have that on an Anzac Day would have been brilliant. So, you know, have it up there where you can get, you know, a decent crowd, 26,000 or something up there at Mount Smart. I mean, that's fantastic and a great atmosphere, and good on them for doing it. And you look at the Phoenix on the other side, who finished, I think, second in the round robin last year, who just fallen from grace. And I think in any other league in the world, Giancarlo Italiano Chiefi would have been sacked. But they've given him the benefit of the doubt for one season. He's obviously got, there's great affection from the fans and the players for him. So they're going to give him another year, and maybe it's just a hangover of so much success from 1 year, and then trying to back it up is tough the next year. But they've been a real disappointment.
Yeah, look, and I think it was a poor decision to re-sign him. I just don't think he's a very, I just don't think he's a visionary type coach. I think he plays a very negative style of football. And it was funny, last year I thought they played quite positively, and then come sort of the playoffs, they just sort of parked the bus, sort of got into what they used to call a Catenaccio style defence, almost four across the back with a sweeper in behind. And I don't know, they just, they're just dreadful to watch. And I just think, I just want to see coaches who just want to, I know it's not always easy, but just want to play that Jurgen Klopp way, just want to try and play positively, try and press, play a little bit more positive. Because at the end of the day, we still want entertainment, don't we?
100%, mate, and I'm old school, and I can remember when you got the ball, you tried to get it forward as quickly as you could, and if you got to the byline, you put it in the area, not pass it all the way back to your bloody keeper.
I mean, they barely get out of their own half the time, the Phoenix, don't they? I mean, it's an awful
one. So do half the Premier League, though. You know, it's so much of this fanning around at the back. Oh, it's a possession game. If you've got the ball, do something with it. If you're not going to, give it to the other team and let them do it.
Agree.
Absolutely, Brooke. Awesome. Anyway, we'll just finish off. Well, the Blues lost last night to the Reds, I'll tell you what.
Yay.
Yep, and of course, your mob, being the typical Wellingtonians, always leave from behind. Looks like they've got a chance of making these playoffs.
Yeah, but I mean, we're playing the Brumbies away, and then we've got the Reds away, and we've got the Chiefs. So I'd say that it's a very faint hope.
What about the Blues?
Oh, look, mate, we're just playing one-dimensional, aren't we? We're just, you know, not winning at the breakdown. We're just not being able to get the ball out wide. You know, not starting Kabaka Barron a little bit during the week, but they clearly well enough to name him on the bench. I mean, just poor selections at times. Ironically, I think they really missed a Kiarawani this year, who I never really rated, but I think Vern Conner got the best out of him, was magnificent last year.
Yep.
It's a season I think they'll just be wanting to put behind them. Maybe they can bounce back next year. Hurricanes, I think it's been about a little bit of just inconsistency in selection. I think you've got Laidlaw there, who's just trying to put the best players out on the park. I mean, I find it hard to believe that Braden Yosse comes off the bench. You know, I think he was the best number 8 in the country last year. And so you say to yourself, Brad Shields at 6, and then you decide whether you want Peter Lakai or Duplessis Karifi starting at 7, and you probably go with Karifi at the moment and bring Lakai off. And I think it's just things like this right across the board. You know, this resting, this rotation, this mentality of putting hybrid players out on the park. Just put the best players out on the park in their positions and be consistent in selection. And I think New Zealand sides have, I think the coaches have let a lot of the players down with All Black aspirations this year in doing that.
Yeah, when you think George Napier played 36 games after travelling for in the space of 3 months, after travelling for 3 months just to get over there. And, you know, it's a totally different, totally different area and application. And it's the same in football, all the professional sports. And I appreciate that it's got more physical and tougher, but they're always looking to make excuses as well for the drop in form. It's a game of attrition. You should put out your 15 out every week unless they get injured.
On that note, I'm going to let you boys get away from me earlier, and we will catch up soon.
Yeah,
cheers,
I'm looking forward to
singing
You'll Never Walk Alone, mate.
Oh, no, I'm going to block my phone off from you, mate. See you later. Bye.
See you, boys.
That was us done for today. Thanks, everyone, for listening.